pressure to save money and make your bid lower than the next company's pushes more vendors now to consider self-insurance. Nicole Mitchell is a certified public accountant and partner in Aronson's Government Contract Services Group, my next guest on Industry Chatter. She and her colleague Latasha Patel write about what you need to know about self-insurance. Nicole, thanks for coming on the program today. What kind of insurance are you writing about, and what does it protect the vendor and the government against? Thanks for coming on today, Nicole.
Yeah, first of all, thanks for having me on the line today. Yeah, let's face it, the world of insurance has gotten a lot more complex these days with the passing of the Affordable Care Act. It's also the largest expense that contractors incur associated with their employees. And around this beltway, we're selling professional services. So if we look at the environment that we're in today, contractors are already in a complex compliance environment. They're operating in a marketplace where there is increased pressure to reduce costs. And with that, we have insurance premiums rising, and the real focus is how can we cut these fringe benefit costs?
And how do vendors make that decision about whether they should self-insure, how they should handle this issue?
Well, first of all, an insurance broker needs to work closely with a federal contractor. And I can't stress enough, first of all, I'm not an insurance broker. I don't sell insurance. What I do is I work with federal contractors on their cost accounting structures, strategies to reduce costs, and what they can do to be more competitive in the federal marketplace. But it's really important that a contractor first works with a broker that is focused in the federal contracting marketplace, that they can evaluate the trade-off of the risk, because really what self-insurance does is it transfers some of the risk to the contractor for a trade-off in lower premiums. And what we're finding is that this is becoming a trend in the federal marketplace as contractors are searching out creative ways to reduce their cost.
You write, to protect the taxpayer interests, the government requires contractors to demonstrate ability to sustain the potential losses involved. That's really the core of the issue in the decision-making process, isn't it, Nicole?
It is. So I'm glad you brought up that that one critical line, because that's where I was going to go next. And that's usually the piece that's missed when you're not working with a broker that's in the federal marketplace. So the federal government is looking to protect their interests. So a federal contractor needs to ensure that they are financially stable in order to take on that financial risk from the insurance broker in order to reduce the premium. The other fact that is often missed is that the federal government, through the approval of your ACO, your administrative contracting officer, must approve for the federal contractor to utilize a self-insured plan before it is implemented. And this is a critical step that's being missed these days, as contractors are so focused on that end dollar being spent, how they can reduce costs, they're missing the compliance in between. So we've got the government on one side, and of course they want reduced costs, but then they also want to ensure that the contractor's financially stable in order to take on that risk, and they want to be notified when a contractor is entering into a self-insured type plan, approve the plan so that they understand what risk the contractor's taking on.
So admittedly, I'm an amateur, Nicole, but when I think about this model and try to apply it to something that I have experienced, I bought our family's car insurance from a broker. I called him up and I gave him the parameters that I wanted the policy to be able to cover. And he ran a couple of options. I chose the lowest price for the parameters that I wanted, and that was pretty much the end of it. Is this that simple regarding working with a broker, or because of complications like the FAR and other issues that are involved here, is it much more complex than that?
Now, Francis, you've been working around this beltway, and we always know that working with the federal government, it's complicated. And where it becomes complicated is when they enter, when a federal contractor enters into a self-insured plan, it's just like you said, you're buying your health insurance or your car insurance, you want a lower rate. You may opt for a higher deductible. You, in a self-insured situation, you would say, hey, the first $100,000 of loss, that'll come out of my pocket situation. But similar, you want to take on that risk yourself. So we're still in that environment, just the way you described it. But there are all these compliance regulations that go inside with that. It requires a proposal to the government to describe the self-insured plan. It requires the government to notify, you know, that year you have that accident and you have to pay out $100,000 is not necessarily the year that the government's taking on that cost. You have to do a look back and determine what the average loss is during a set period of time. So it's not as easy as contractors think. And a lot of times they're sold into a self-insured plan for the pickup this year of having a lower premium without thinking about the administrative side and going into the federal acquisition regulations and specifically looking at FAR Part 28 and having an understanding as to what they're signing up for, what they need to notify the government about, and how they have to account for the cost evenly over the time period so that contracts are sharing in their pro rata share of this risk that they're taking on.
Nicole Mitchell, CPA at Aronson's Government Contract Services Group and a partner there, and she and her colleague Latasha Patel writing about self-insurance, and you can find links to both of their work at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. And as I read, Nicole, the work that you and Latasha have put out about this, it strikes me that there are two things. We've talked about the compliance part of it, and then the other piece of it seems to me to be how you account for it and determine how much you pay for and what the government pays for. Am I on track there?
You are absolutely on track, and that's where it gets complex. You know, this whole topic...
Wait a minute. I thought it was complex already.
Well, you know what? This whole topic has arisen because where we started writing about that, because in our contractor base, we started seeing Department of Defense DCAA audits pop up, and contractors were getting the cost disallowed right away. And the first thought in the contractor's mind was, but wait, I self-insured to reduce the cost to the government. How can you DCAA come in now and disallow? And it all goes back to, number one, did they get approval to have the plan? DCAA is not going to care whether or not you saved the money. They're going to look at step one. Mm-hmm. Did you notify the government? Then they're going to look at step two and say, how did you account for this? And if you can't pass the requirements as they've have them written out in the FAR, they're going to throw the cost out. So this has been a trend that we're seeing, contractors getting creative, getting these self-insured plans, and then now we're actually seeing them come under scrutiny, under audit. And I can tell you, we started this series in May because I must have had three interactions with clients where they were under audits by DCAA. They were new clients. They hadn't talked to us before, so I'm trying to post to get people proactive on this so that they don't have problems in the end when they enter into this this type of plan. And let's face it, we're all trying to cut cost. Entering into a self-insured plan is one of the ways that a government contractor can cut cost. Again, fringe benefits, one of the largest expenses associated with having employees on your staff. And it's a good route to go. You got to make sure you're working with the right people. You have to understand and acknowledge that it's complicated and find the right person who knows the rules and regulations so you don't have any problems on the back end.
You have very eloquently touched on what the issues are that you've seen it doing this, some of the major ones. We only have about a minute left, Nicole. What are some of the other places where you've seen companies go wrong when they try to self-insure?
Other areas is that they're not financially planned for the back end. They're looking at 1 year out, and they're not looking at the long term. So every year they have to measure what the savings are. They have to make sure that they're financially stable enough to cover a loss when it does occur. A lot of times contractors enter into this plan thinking that I'm rolling the dice, I'm taking the gamble that the loss is not going to occur. They have to plan for worst case scenario.
Just a second left, meaning from a compliance with the government perspective or just a business sustainability viability point of view, or both maybe?
Business sustainability and viability.
It's great to talk to you, Nicole. Thank you very much for coming on the program today.
Thank you for having me on.